it was on the wind of God, actually, and it was really as a result of a heavy wind blowing the night before, which it did again. I was reminded of that last night, east wind blowing crazy, and a lot of people wanted an expansion on that, because I did admit that it was a last-minute idea. And for the next 4 weeks, we're going to kind of look at some texts in Scripture about wind. And we want to talk a little bit today about the wind that comes in the book of Exodus, wind of God, the unseen power of God. And to kind of, for those that weren't here, to remind you kind of the illustration that was used, it was, if you imagine a bird's eye view going down on a ship, right? And so even though this is not looking down, what we want to think about is a sailboat that has a sail. And let's imagine that we have the winds coming from the east. You're looking down. If you were to, we're talking about heavy winds and rough seas. So heavy winds and rough seas, which is the, what kind of direction do you want to go? Well, if you turned to the left or turned north, the wind would catch your sail and drop your ship over, particularly in heavy seas. If you turn south, it would catch a sail and drop your sailboat over. If you tried to run away from the wind, you'd take a nosedive into the steep waves that were going away from you. And the way in which you tackle it, interestingly, if you go straight into the wind, you don't get any wind to fill up the sails. You've got to kind of angle it a little way. And the irony is that you have a ton of power to move forward into the waves when you're facing them just a little off. You can't really take on the wind, but you can adjust a few degrees each way and to allow the wind to fill the sails and to have the power to actually move forward right through tough waters, which is a fascinating illustration of the Christian life, in that if you try to kind of avoid the waves that are heading towards you by turning left, by turning right, or running away, you're just going to fall on your face. But you know you just can't take them on and saying, I'm going to win. You have to actually be helped and led by a power that is not your own, so that it begins to fill these sails and you make progress in the direction you want to go. So that was the illustration that we used that day, was to describe the unseen power of God to allow you to go through the waves. So, there we go. We're going to save. That's publishable. That's beautiful. So our text for today, printed in your bulletin, are these two. Exodus 14, Exodus 15. Setting up the story, the Israelites have left after the 10 plagues, the slavery they found in Egypt. They're panicking as the Egyptians are coming on their heels. They're thinking, this is a big, utter mistake. We're looking in front of us, we see a sea of water. This is really a stupid idea. Moses, you've led us the wrong way. Moses tells the people, you need to be still and to see the deliverance that the Lord your God will give you this day. It will be his power, but you do nothing. You just stand still and wait for it. He instructs Moses to stretch out his hands, and this is what we read. Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. And then in Exodus 15, this is the big prayer, almost song, it says this, you blew your wind and the sea covered them. They sank like lead in the mighty waters. For who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in glorious deeds, doing wonders? You stretched out your right hand and the earth swallowed them. The story is so very familiar, but it wasn't until this week till I recognized even more deeply the way in which wind played a role in that very deal. Um, So over here we've got Egypt. And represent that with the sun god Ra and a life of, for those of you who know, the delta of the Nile River is just fertile. Egypt was a power of the world. It was wealthy, it was strong, it was full of might, it had a lot of natural resources. It was living in the prized possession of the world. And yet, they had put the Israelites into 400 years of slavery. And the Israelites came out of it, and they were faced with a body of water called the Red Sea. And not knowing what was beyond it, I can't really draw a cactus. There's no cacti in the Arabian Peninsula that I know of, but desert, let's just put a big D. That's all I got. And they didn't know what was beyond it, but all they knew was this world of massive power, wealth, and all the answers that you needed to know. Pharaoh was like the gods, in fact, referred to as a god, and everything had an explanation. They had diviners and sorcerers and powerful officials and world dominance, and yet they were in slavery. They hated it, but they got so used to it, they didn't know anything else but it. And they came out to the Red Sea, maybe, Israelite camp just right here, and they're being pursued by chariots, and they don't know what's going to go, how it's going to unfold. And the Lord tells Moses to stretch out his hands, and a wind starts to blow, an east wind. It's coming from this direction. It's coming from the direction of the desert, and it blew all night to the extent that as it was blowing, there is a wall being formed on the left and a wall being formed on the right that allows the Israelite camp to begin over the process of that, to move hundreds of thousands of people through it to a place they've never known. Which means that while they were walking through it, they were walking into the wind. That wind continued to blow, it said, all night long, such that it kept the water to the left and to the right. There's some who like to maybe do a scholarly thing that maybe it happened at the top end of the Red Sea, that the wind blew and kind of just made a water thing here, and it was just kind of shallow to begin with. It's not really the case. It's a big wall of water on the left and the right, and yet there's still this natural thing going on. It's not just simply boom, it's there. It's driven by wind, and the Lord sustains it long enough for everybody to get through. And of course, that's the image of the redemptive movement of God. That you stand at something you don't think you can fix on your own strength and your own power. In fact, you know you can't fix it by your own strength and your own power. He has to do something for us that we can't do for ourselves. We're in a rock and a hard place right here. And He opens up a way for us to move forward, which of course is what the message of the cross is, that you have this sense that you're standing between a rock and a hard place, between a life you might have known that's become comfortable to you, a life of power, a life of kind of pick your own religion, a life of security, and interestingly, though, also a life of slavery. But yet, being at the point at which you can't fix it, can't change it. You can't just give yourself, the book of Change Your Life for Dummies kind of thing at Barnes & Noble. There's no fix-it plan. So this cross has always been understood by Christians to be something that you cannot do for yourself. It allows you to move from a place where you're stuck out here into a life of the beginning point. We use that intentionally, the beginning of the start of freedom in life. But that's not the whole story of the wind. That just as the wind blew this way, and they had to walk into it, however hard it may have been to walk through that, the Lord, after they've gone through it, changes direction. Such that the walls come down. These walls of water crumple and drown the Egyptians. And there's another piece to this then, is that not only in the path of redemption do you have to be rescued from something, but you have to be able to live your life now looking back on where you once were, or be tempted to go back that way. Not only are you being given a future, but God has to do something decisively to cut you off from walking back into your past. Going back into the world of the comfort of slavery with all the promise of power, wealth, and you name it. So God has to do two things in redemption. Again, make a way forward, but also decisively kill what you're leaving behind. Does that make sense to you? It makes a lot of sense to me. Because we like this movement, I think. We like being given a hope. We like being given a future. We like being given the fact that God has forgiven us, moved us in a good direction, given us hope, given us a future. But I wonder how much of us think that God has decided to drown what we're leaving behind. That he decisively wants to destroy it. That he decisively wants us to begin, however arduously, living this life in the wilderness. The redemption has to be both things, and the power of God has to be doing both of those things, making up a way for us to move forward, but also decisively blowing his wind to leave in the dust something that we need to leave behind, but are continually thinking, I don't know if I want to let go of it. Last PowerPoint. So, this is where it gets fun, in my view, is that when you look at the Arabian Peninsula, you've got kind of these two bodies of water, okay? And you've got up here, Mediterranean, okay? You tracking with me? This is like the end of the Mediterranean Sea. Saudi Arabia now, here today, Mediterranean Peninsula. This is the Red Sea. This is the Delta Nile right here, and the Nile goes down. Over here is the Promised Land, PL. Remember that. And So we're up here with Pharaoh. Here's the Promised Land. Actually, the sea stops about right here. So the shortest distance between two points is what? Yeah. There's not a single body of water between Egypt and the Promised Land. You can draw a straight line there. Look it up on a map. God decided to do this. Then it parted the waters. Okay, we're through. Where's the straight line again? Okay. You ready? This is literally how it goes. It's gonna, you look up on online maps, it'll be exactly as good as this drawing. You're going to go like this. It goes down, and they hit Mount Sinai. Ten Commandments. Then they go up, and then, yes. No, we'll cycle back around. Down. Yes. They come back around. Then they start making their way north, and no, we'll come back. And then we get to here. Does anybody's life look like that? Yeah? Yeah. What on earth is that about? But you know what? At this point where food stunk and he gave quail, that was an important moment. And at this point where water came out of a rock, and they were thirsty as all get out. That was really important. And down here in Mount Sinai, when they lost their minds and they started behaving like idiots, that was an important moment. And then time and time again, when they began to learn how to worship the Lord, and when they also had struggles with snakes, and they also had struggles with bands of armies coming and attacking them as nomads. You name it along the way. There's not a wasted moment in these 40 years. But man, what a journey and what a crazy way to go. And it all starts with this moment in which the wind of God had to decisively open up a way for them to move forward and then also decisively bury what they've left behind. Because right here, they said they wanted to go back. And right here, they said they wanted to go back. And right here, they said they wanted to go back. And right here, they fashioned the God they already had worshipped in Egypt with the gold that they had in their hands. God rescues his people from Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. But it's hard to get Egypt out of the people, isn't it? And this is the place of slavery. Egypt is the place of slavery. But when he brings you through, and he also buries what you've left behind, I don't think that there is a pathway back and forth. You're either on one side or the other. You can't stand at the bottom of the Red Sea, just kind of making your way to each shore. But they're still in the wilderness journey, a reality which you're not the promised land yet. And if this is the point of slavery, the desire here to be back in Egypt is what we might call just more stupidity. It's not slavery. What God has done for you in Jesus Christ is to take you out of slavery. You are free in that. And that is what we forget. We forget what he's done. We forget what he's buried. But we are stupid. That's why the Bible calls us like sheep. Is that it becomes more and more not that we're back in Egypt, but a sense that we're making decisions at times that forget who we are, forget what God has done, and then the damage that is done is more damage that's just damage done to ourselves, to our families, to our communities, you name it. It's just stupid living, which is why the desert is so important to get us to a point to really begin to trust him. Okay, I was without water at one point. Did he provide it? He did. Without food at one point, did he provide it? He did. Okay, I lost my mind at this point. What did he do? Well, he gave me his wisdom, his Ten Commandments. He gave me forgiveness. Along this point, they began to really worship the Lord and begin to have a sense of the lamb that takes away the sins of the community. And they'd put the sins on the lamb, send them out into the wilderness. They began to get in their bones and then in their system what it is that God has done. So at the end of the sermon here, we have this question. What do you do? What is a sermon about in terms of what you do? Well, it's not about that at all. Did the Israelites do anything to part that sea? No. And did the Israelites do anything to close up that sea from their past? No. So what is the Lord's command in the aftermath of that? Remember. That's it. But it means a lot. When you forget what he's done, you replace him with yourself. When you forget what he's buried, you begin to long for it. When you forget what he's redeemed you from, you make your own way. It's just remember. Take your children, sit down at the table, remember the Passover were the instructions, and tell them what the Lord your God did for you. It's our biggest problem, is that we just forget that he parted the seas and he covered them up. Let's just be honest enough to say we've been stupid at times and come to the table this morning and just remember that he blew his wind and he opened up a way. And he did blow his wind the other way around and covered up what we've left behind. And he wants us, however arduous the journey on that crazy path of life, to just simply at each point of the way remember his unseen power as well as his goodness, the mighty power of God. Let's pray. Lord, we give you thanks.